Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to
Hot Takes
with
Nolan and Eric.
Welcome to another edition of Hot Takes. I'm Eric Nifong. You can find me on Twitter at @E_Nifong. I'm joined by Nolan Haig. You can find him on Twitter at @NJH09. And after a couple of lackluster Final Four games, what a championship game we got last night. That's why we're joining you here Tuesday night. We were watching that game, and I'm glad we were. Saw probably two of the biggest shots in championship game history. One will be forgotten, and one will be remembered forever. And what a game that was!
Yeah, especially after those few jokes of a game we got on Saturday. it was a lot of fun, pretty much the whole way through. It's competitive. A lot of shots were falling for the most part. And yeah, we got probably a top three NCAA tournament moment out of it, at least. So all in all, I'd say, yeah, it was everybody wins.
Yeah, at least. And we all thought, I mean, at least I thought that that shot was going to be Marcus Page, who had a ridiculous double clutch hanging in the air three right before that. And then, of course, we'll all remember the Chris Jenkins trailing three for the rest of time, I guess. So, yeah, what a game. I think Villanova held a 10-point lead at one time. It was the largest lead held by either team, and they didn't hold it for very long. UNC went on that run, and it was capped by that Marcus Page three. So, great game. Didn't know really what to expect after the Final Four games on Saturday. But, we got a pretty good game, and ready to get excited to talk about that and kind of those Final Four games here. So, of course, those were part of our hot picks last week. And in the first Final Four game Saturday, we had I don't even know if we should call it a game, but Villanova and Oklahoma. Villanova.
It was a game for about 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, it wasn't too out of hand there in the first half. Oklahoma, I mean, they still had a chance to come back. You know how basketball works.
Thought there in the second half they were gonna come back. They had gotten that foul and then got a putback on the missed free throw and got it back within single digits. Thought something was going to happen, but yeah, no, it actually just got incredibly worse from there.
Yeah, Villanova was not missing anything. I think it had mostly to do with them not missing their shots and Oklahoma not playing very good defense. Villanova, of course, that's the second highest shooting percentage in Final Four history, right behind Villanova. So, maybe it's just something when they get to that Final Four, they just the baskets become huge to them. But
I was actually thinking about it last night, and Villanova probably has two of the coolest NCAA championship game wins in the history of the tournament.
Definitely. When they get that far, they definitely make it exciting. So, you know you're going to get that when they're playing. At least so, and apparently they just did not want to miss the whole tournament. I think the worst game they had was against that, against Kansas in the Elite Eight. I think they shot under 50% in the game. It's the only game they shot under 50%, and that's just remarkable. They were on a mission, and they capped it off. I personally thought North Carolina would be able to control down low. They did for the most part. They out-rebounded them, had more chance points. But Villanova played very well everywhere else on defense, came away with turnovers, and wouldn't you know it, North Carolina not hitting very many threes throughout the tournament, make it as far as they do, had their best night shooting the three, and they lose. So maybe they shouldn't have been making threes. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, yeah, no, Villanova really just kind of did what they did all tournament, played good defense and made shots. Really, yeah, not a whole lot else you can say about that. But as for North Carolina, I got to give it up for Marcus Page. He had another amazing game. It seemed like at times he was getting to the rim at will, laying it in, making threes also. Especially those last two threes to pull them within, to pull them within. I think it was one and or pull, it was either pull them within three or pull them within one, and then later again, of course, to tie it with that ridiculous shot. But he definitely came on strong here in the last few weeks and finally started living up to the hype.
Yeah. He definitely enjoys these tournament games. He has some really good numbers throughout the tournament in his career. Of course, we all know about what, I mean, we've said it ourselves with the shooting struggles all season. He really turned that around, and he looked like a first-round draft pick, and I think he could still possibly go in the first round. He had lottery potential a couple years ago and at the end of last year, but I'm not sure if he'll get that high, but some team might come away with the steal in the draft if they do take a chance on him. He really impressed me in the tournament to show that he can definitely do what we thought he could do. So,
yeah, no, yeah, like I said, I came away super impressed with him over the course of this tournament. But again, Villanova. Just the better team. They were able to actually take kind of not exactly take away what North Carolina did better. They didn't out rebound them, but they outscored them in points in the paint, and didn't take Bryce Johnson out of the game. But 14-8 is isn't as well as he usually does. And then Kennedy Meeks just didn't have a good game at all. 1-for-8 from the field. So. When you can take that away, even when North is making shots like they were for a while, they kind of went cold there in the second half. But all the credit in the world to the Wildcats.
Yeah, I actually one guy that I kind of think went a little overlooked. His numbers aren't going to jump out at you or anything, but Daniel Ochefu, I think, provided a lot of help down low for Villanova. Their biggest player by far. And I thought that he kind of was able to control Bryce Johnson and Kennedy Meeks just enough to slow them down and to be able to keep them from running, which I think was the biggest thing that Villanova did was keeping North Carolina out of transition all game. Pretty much they played at Villanova's pace and Villanova did it. And we of course didn't even have Villanova in the championship game. We both went with Oklahoma. So hats off to Villanova to proving everyone wrong. I actually had them out in the second round and hats off.
Yeah, no, definitely. And one more thing on Ochefu. He actually set up the screen to kind of set in motion that game-winning play. So, yeah, like you said, he kind of, a little bit under the radar, but definitely deserved of the accomplishment.
Yeah, and also, can we can't go without saying that sixth man, Phil Booth, who averaged 6 points a game all season, come out and drop a team-high 20 points off the bench in the biggest game
of
his life.
Yes, after scoring 27 points total in the tournament to that point, to the last night. Yes, he definitely showed up big time.
Yeah, that was huge for Villanova and really gave him an advantage off the bench.
And even Chris Jenkins, even in addition to hitting the game-winning shot, actually had 14 points in only 21 minutes because a little bit of foul trouble. But same thing, even when things are going wrong, they're kind of going right. So when it's your day, it's your day.
Yeah.
And one more thing.
Much, yeah.
I'm sorry. We got to talk about Jay Wright and his reaction. Not only did he call it by saying bang, but then just kind of walked it off as it happened, like, yeah, it's good. I knew it. It was all right.
Yeah, he definitely remained calm and cool, which I think is kind of his persona. So he definitely did that, which I actually kind of liked. Before he even celebrated, he just went over, shook the hand, and then celebrated after that. And his team kind of followed suit after they realized that the line was going. So, yeah, it was good. It was a good time moment for the players, and Jay Wright let them enjoy it.
Yeah.
And congrats to him on finally getting a championship. I think he's a really underrated coach in college basketball, and
definitely.
Good to see him finally get that. So.
And yeah, definitely just some of the exits they've had in the last few years. It seems like, yeah, there's been some exercising of demons a little bit, but
So
thought I had one
I
more thing, but I guess not.
Yeah, I kind of want to get something off my chest here. I don't know if you were watching last night, but Reg, I was watching the CBS post game of the game, and Reggie Miller was talking about it and said it could possibly be Chris Jenkins' biggest shot of his life. I just want to go ahead and say that I definitely think that was the biggest shot of his life. Just going to go out on a limb there. Just say that.
Whose shot?
Chris Jenkins at the end there.
He said that it wasn't?
No, he said it could possibly be the shot of his life. Yeah. So.
So you're just bothered by the wording.
I'm sure.
Oh no, yeah. Easily. I mean, it probably will remain more than likely the biggest shot of his life. I want to do something here real quick. If you had to rank them, how are you putting this shot, Christian Laettner's shot, and Lorenzo Charles for NC State to beat Houston? How are you ranking those three?
Well, I'm putting Christian Laettner at number three off the bat just because it was an Elite Eight game, correct? It wasn't it wasn't even the Final Four, I don't think, right?
It was, I believe it was Final Four game. It was to go to the championship game.
To go to the championship
game. But, yes.
Okay.
I'm just kind of going with these three famous shots. But, yeah, but I understand your reasoning.
Yeah, and I now why I say that, I do think Christian Laettner's shot was the hardest shot. He had the biggest degree of difficulty by catching, turning, and shooting. I think that play was just the biggest difficulty, but with everything that was on the line, I'm going to have to go NC State. I'm pretty sure they were trailing in that game. And if he doesn't make it, they lose, makes it, they win. Chris Jenkins, if he misses last night, they go to overtime, still have a chance to win. So I'm going to have to go NC State, Charles number one, I think. So, yeah.
You know, I think I have to agree with you. On the numbering, maybe again, a lot of the reasoning's pretty sound. That's probably what I'd do. But yeah, no, definitely. You get, I mean, there's that underdog element of NC State in that game, and all the storylines, of course, around that. I mean, Villanova might have been a slight underdog, but nobody was surprised that they won this game, I don't think.
I was kind of surprised. I didn't think they'd be able
to. I'm just saying, I knew they could win.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't think they'd be able to handle North Carolina down low. But, yeah, they proved me wrong, so. They did it, so.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. But we didn't really even talk about the Syracuse game, a team that was pretty surprising that they were there as well. We both had North Carolina winning that game. North Carolina ended up winning, which was the best game of the night and a 17-point victory for North Carolina. But Syracuse played really well. Their shots just weren't falling. North Carolina had a good season. I thought they were the best team standing, they weren't. But I think they're going to have to rebuild quite a bit. They lose Paige and Bryce Johnson. I can't think of any recruits that they got off the top of my head. No, I don't think they're going to have anyone come in and change their program right off the bat. I think North Carolina is going to be good still next year. And they had a good season. So, and same to Syracuse, too. If Malachi Richardson ends up staying, him and Tyler Lydon could be a pretty good combo for the Orangemen for the next couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, for Syracuse, yeah, I just think they just kind of ran out of gas. With a little bit of inexperience and a little bit of, you know, not really expecting to be to that point. Definitely Buckeye comes back. The future's bright for Syracuse. North Carolina, you still kind of have those sanctions that could be looming. So have to see what happens there, but. Yeah, no. It was a good basketball season.
Yeah, definitely good basketball season. Another good March Madness. So I guess that'll put the season to an end here. So till next season.
Yep.
And also, Carolina win it all. And you had picked Oklahoma, so we both got those wrong in our little upset. So we didn't do too well.
Yeah, we were off throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, so. But way it goes, I guess.
Yeah, we'll try and do better.
Yeah, so let's get into a little opening day baseball here. Season kicked off Sunday at noon with some Pirates-Cardinals action. Pirates went on to win that game 4-1, and Cardinals had a really hard time hitting the ball. Francisco Liriano with 12 strikeouts and looked pretty good out there. Do you think the Pirates still have a chance to compete in the NL Central this year? I thought maybe they'd take a step back, but now they won today too, so they had two wins over the Cardinals here early part of the season. Do you think they have a legitimate shot still, or do you think they're kind of past what their window's kind of closing, I guess?
I wouldn't say that. I think, they could be every bit as good as this year. I mean, the NL Central could be every bit as close as it was last year. Maybe this is just me hoping more than thinking, but I don't know how well the Cardinals are going to be honest. I think it might be more of a Cubs-Pirates race when it comes down to it. But, yeah, like you said, Francisco Liriano looked great coming out, pitched six good innings, didn't give up a run, they ran into a little bit of trouble, but was able to get out of the few jams he found himself in. Hopefully they can keep going and get keep chasing those Cubs, because they actually looked pretty dominant against the Angels in a 9-0, since they're going to evaluate these one games and act like they're going to set the top of the season.
Yeah, the Cubs are going to be a really tough team to face all season. I kind of agree with you now. The Cardinals have to stay healthy if they want to kind of compete there in the NL Central still. They are the Cardinals, so it's hard to write them off. I'm not going to write them off, especially after two games. That would be just ludicrous. But I definitely think – I don't think they're going to have as easy a ride as they did last year. I think they lost a lot of good pitching that they had last year. They're going to have Wainwright come back to the old Wainwright. And he's getting older, coming off an injury. Not quite sure if he can. But if he can, I think the Cardinals are going to be right there as well. So we'll just have to see. They also lost Tommy Pham on the first at bat of the season. They're going to have to stay healthy, which you'd say for anyone, I guess.
Yeah, and not only is that NL Central stacked, but there just seems to be so many good teams in the NL. You've always got the Dodgers and the Giants. The Giants kind of reloaded a little bit, and, of course, it's an even year, so you got to watch out. But National League just does not look fun to play in right now.
Yeah, and can't forget about the D-backs, who Zach Greinke kind of got rocked in his first game there. But I think that they're going to be right there till the end. They have an MVP caliber player in the field, and they have a Cy Young caliber player pitching. They also have not a bad second option. So I think the D-backs will be right there at the end of the year. Not quite sure if they can get over the hump. Not sure if they have enough offense, but we'll have to see. The NL's going to be tough this year, and it's going to be fun to watch, because I'm not really sure who the best team is. I want to lean Cubs, but I wouldn't be surprised if some team surprises me. Maybe the Dodgers finally get over the hump, and Yasiel Puig continues to mature. So we'll have to see.
Yeah. All right. Bryce Harper hit. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can we also mention Colorado rookie Trevor Story? First time in history that a rookie has hit two home runs in an opening day game. Did that yesterday, and he also added a home run today. So maybe they found something there. The guy who replaced Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, or,
plays in Coors Field.
Or it could be two games, or it could be, who knows? But, yeah, no, definitely good for him. That's awesome. He's kind of crazy seeing these power surges in this time when it seems that pitching is so done.
Yeah, most definitely. I want to talk a little bit about this Royals-Mets game. Hung the banner, got the rings today, split the series with the Mets, and season's underway for the defending World Series champs.
Yeah, I am so done with the Mets. I'm ready to see new faces. And a lot of the players kind of said it really felt like a continuation of the World Series, and that's kind of how I felt watching these last games. It wasn't as stressful, of course, but it just I don't know. It all still feels very close and not that long ago, however many months. Like we kind of assumed that opening night, everything kind of seemed set up for the Royals, at least until Joaquin Soria came in. Eric Hosmer had three hits, one of which was had on that bunt, Flynn head first into first base, but also had an RBI. Omar Infante had a pretty good game, had himself an RBI, and made a really caught stealing that Salvador threw from his knee. Overall, you know, they played a good game the other night and get offensive day. So good for the Mets to get one win for their egos, I guess, so they can start their path to predict.
Yeah, good game. Did Joaquin Soria kind of scare you a little bit? Or to me, it just kind of seemed like he was nervous being back in the K. Kind of the night maybe got to him a little bit. Do you think just get one game in, got to give it time? Or is there kind of some concern there?
No, I there isn't really any concern. You know, sometimes, you know, it's just one game or it's opening day. Things are pretty fluky. At least at first, he can't really take anything for face value. He came in today. One thing is he just didn't seem to, when he came in, he just didn't really seem to have any control. That kind of seemed to be an issue for Volquez, but Volquez always seemed to find a pitcher to getting out and stay out of trouble. But yeah, no, Soria, it seemed like he couldn't find any control. He kept throwing fastballs and not located. And when he's only throwing fastballs, when he finally get one over the plate, he came in and pitched the ninth inning, and a little bit, had some control. He looked fine. So, I'm still not crazy about him being in the eighth inning role. I'd rather see him in the seventh inning role and keep Kelvin Herrera in the eighth inning, like he eventually took over last postseason after that's blown. Ben has to be so stubborn about things, but no, yeah, I think Soria will be fine. Just needs to settle into the seat.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that there can be a lot of quick overreactions and two games in, nothing to worry about really. So, is there anything else that kind of caught your eye from opening day that you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of. The only other game that happened on that Sunday was the Blue Jays, and I know Troy Tulowitzki's a home run, so that happened. But I think that's all I got.
Yeah, same here. Picks last week, I went 2-3, 0-1 with that championship pick. You went 3-2, 0-1 with your championship pick. So you took a 5-game lead on the season. So went one game up on me. I thought I'd get you with that North Carolina pick, but to stay even, but didn't turn out to go that way. So let's see. But so last week after the show, the day after, there was some news in the NBA world. Not your normal news. It was kind of some drama. When I first saw it, I kind of laughed. I didn't know what to think about it. And it just kind of blew up. And of course that's D'Angelo Russell reportedly filming the teammate while they're having a one-on-one conversation. That teammate, Nick Young, married to Iggy Azalea, was apparently talking about other women and things like that. And it caused a lot of turmoil and drama with the Lakers. They kind of been shunning him, and not talking to him and things like that. Not really on the court. He's actually still putting up some pretty good numbers, still playing pretty good. They shut down Nick Young for the season, said his head wasn't in basketball right now, and that's understandable. So people were saying that D'Angelo Russell should be traded after this, and I think that would be a mistake if they wound up doing that. But what do you think about this whole situation?
I mean, obviously, he made some sort of mistake. I don't know why he what the reason was for recording. But I don't know. But then again, obviously, Swaggy P probably shouldn't be running around on you know, his wife. So that's a whole other thing. But no, I mean, it, obviously, yeah, he made a mistake. He probably didn't. He wasn't. I don't know. Maybe he couldn't have meant any harm by it. Or didn't mean for it to get out for whatever reason. But the Lakers would be crazy to get rid of him. If anything, they need to clear everybody else out but him and Julius Randle and start the team over. Because there's kind of, I don't know, there's obviously going to be a transition. It's because Kobe's gone now. It's not Kobe's team anymore. And the team that they had kind of pieced together these last couple of years around Kobe getting hurt or whatever they've been trying to do just hasn't been working. And yeah, but the future of that team is with D'Angelo Russell running the point. So they have to figure out a way to make that work. And if that means get rid of everybody else, then so be it.
Yeah, that's kind of was my thought about it. People were talking about how the locker room couldn't really trust them anymore and things along that nature, and how he kind of just tore the locker room apart. But my kind of thinking is that is how many of those guys do they really want in that locker room other than D'Angelo Russell? So, yeah, I would be trying to get rid of those other guys before I tried to get rid of D'Angelo Russell. I definitely think their future's in him. I think they made a great pick with him. I think he's going to be at least an all-star caliber player for years to come. So it would be a definite mistake, especially if they trade him to the Celtics, who reportedly right after this would offer them a package deal that would be hard for the Lakers to turn down. And I just think that'd be a mistake if they were to do that. The Lakers need a lot of help right now. Trading D'Angelo Russell is not going to help your problems any. I think he definitely made a mistake, maybe immaturity or what it was. But I loved what he did afterwards. He came out, he confessed, he seemed really sincere to me, and I think that, I mean, no one's really talking about it anymore, so I think it's going to kind of just go out, just kind of go away, and the players will, they'll solve it themselves. So, definitely weird news.
Yeah, I feel like eventually, yeah, things will blow over, or enough people change. Like you said, he apologized. He knows what he knows what he did wrong or what happened, and the damage that it caused. I know, or at least the damage that it caused with his relationship with his teammates, with these teammates. I think he'll make that mistake in the future, or at least will, I don't know, be more careful in the future and not board everything.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll learn a pretty valuable lesson from this. And, we'll go from here. Of course, if he did it again, that's when you might start thinking about the trade things. But they definitely shouldn't trade him right now. So he's definitely the future of the Lakers. I think even if they get a top pick and whoever they draft, I think D'Angelo Russell's still going to be the guy for the Lakers. So we'll have to see. Where that goes this off season, which we have a ways to go. We have 5 games left in the regular season for most teams. Playoffs start in just a couple weeks here. I'm pretty excited, and that kind of leads us into our hot picks this week, who have a couple Warriors-Spurs games in here. A couple Spurs games that could possibly prevent the Warriors from reaching 73 wins. They have to go 4-1 the rest of the way. Kind of lost a shocker on Friday night to the Celtics, ended their home winning streak at 54 games. They will be back at home against the Spurs. They're actually playing the Timberwolves right now in Golden State. So last I saw, they were leading. But Thursday night, they'll be playing the Spurs. Could be at 70 wins already playing in Golden State. I like the Warriors to win that matchup, being in Golden State. Not sure what the Spurs are going to do, how they're going to play it. So without knowing that knowledge, I'm going to have to go Warriors here. So who do you like in that matchup?
Yeah, I'm having a lot of trouble deciding on these games. The Warriors kind of have a weird last four games. They go Spurs, Grizzlies, Spurs, Grizzlies. And I'm just trying to kind of think about it in the context of can they do it? I mean, they can still lose one more time, right, and still have the record.
Yeah, they have to go 4-1, including tonight.
Right. So it's not so much whether or not I think the Spurs will win a game, because I think the Spurs will win one game. I don't know. Do I think they'll beat Memphis? But that's another thing. Yeah, I'm gonna have to lean towards them winning at home. They're gonna want to get up for this one, because they're gunning for it. I'm sure they have to be. But I also think the Spurs will take the second game in San Antonio. So yeah, they're gonna split, but I do still think the Warriors will get that record.
All right. Well, we'll probably, if they're still on pace, we'll probably be picking that Grizzlies game next week on our show, because that could be for number 73. We'll have to see. So you're going Spurs at home and then Warriors at home?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that Spurs-Warriors game is Sunday afternoon. So they kind of go, and that's actually on the night of a back-to-back, so that's going to be a tough game, especially if the Spurs send out everyone they want. Could also, I believe that's their last home game, second to last home game, so they could also go 41-0 at home, which would be the first time an NBA team's ever done that. So, we'll have to see if because Spurs have a couple of streaks going of their own, so we'll have to see.
Which would just be pretty cool that if you've got a team that breaks the record for win losses, and then you have a team that sets a record for home wins, and they're not the same team.
Yeah, just crazy, crazy season with both of those teams and what they've been able to do this year. But I like the Warriors to win both of those. I actually think the Warriors are going to win out and win 74 games this season. So,
wow. All right.
Yeah, let's see. I just don't think that the Spurs, I think when they play in Golden State, I think the Spurs are going to play most of their guys, but I think with just two or three games left on Sunday in San Antonio, I don't think the Spurs are going to play too many guys, and that's why I think they get the victory there. I also think Pop might play a couple of head games with the Warriors by doing that, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, I also think there's a slight possibility that the Spurs go out all out in this first game and then, yeah, for the most part, rest everybody in the second game and not really care about the whole record or anything, because that's just what Greg Popovich would do.
Yeah, it really is. So, they should be a couple of good games, though, so we'll have to see. But our other two picks here are baseball, a couple of good matchups. Tomorrow night we have Astros Yankees. We have Colin McHugh and Michael Pineda in this one. Astros got the first win. Who do you like in this matchup?
As far as the teams go, you know, I never really liked the Yankees, but they seem to be back on the rise. Unfortunately, they brought in brought in Aroldis Chapman, but we'll see about that. To try and strengthen that already crazy bullpen, they're looking to get back into the playoffs. The Astros are also are probably younger and probably better, at least in the lineup, I would think. But they took the first game, but I think the Yankees are going to come back and win the second one. So there we go.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going Yankees. I like Pineda on the mound, and I think they're going to get it done. Dellin Betances actually cost the game for the Yankees. Well, he didn't cost it, but gave up the game-tying run on an error, and or game-winning run, sorry, on an error. So kind of a shock. Betances doesn't allow a lot of runs, so I think they'll rebound. And, of course, you mentioned Chapman, but we won't see him till game 31. So, yeah.
Yep. Okay. And then our next game, we've got the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. It's going to be kind of a interesting game because David Price is going to be going against Marco Estrada. David Price, of course, pitched for Toronto last year in the playoffs to mixed results. Red Sox are also same as the Yankees. Trying to get back in it and compete again, especially in this tough division now that the Blue Jays have kind of risen. So what do you like about that one?
Yeah, I'm going Red Sox here. I just like David Price on the mound. Can't get much better in the regular season, at least. So I'm going to have to go him over Marco Estrada in this matchup and get a win in Toronto, which he couldn't get the last time he was there.
Right. Oh, man. Jokes. I'm actually going to go Blue Jays. I think that that David Price plays right into this right-handed heavy Blue Jay lineup, and they hit the ball hard. They hit it far. And
they
it's
do
tough
do that.
To avoid.
I will not argue with that.
I think Blue Jays take this one.
All right. Well, that leads us to our upset picks. Did you find one? You got an upset pick here?
Yeah, I got one. The Braves are going to win their next game.
All right. What game is that?
I couldn't tell you, but they're going to win it because they're the underdog.
All right, Braves win their next game. All right. Well, my upset pick is the Lakers are going to beat the Rockets on Sunday and officially knock the Rockets out of the playoffs.
Oh, wow. Playing a little spoiler. Man, poor Kobe.
Yeah, he's got to go out. He's got to go out by eliminating someone. So it's what he's going to do.
I mean, I guess that would kind of be a Kobe thing to do.
Yeah, it would. But,
all right.
Your Braves play the Nationals tomorrow night. So,
all right. Well, they're taking down Bryce Harper and all his opening day home runs.
All right. We will see. So, you got a hot take? Mine is
Marco Estrada is going to throw 7 shutout innings.
All right. Mine is Duke's going to win it all next season.
What? How are we going to check that? We can't check that on the review show.
Yeah, we can. We'll check that.
We can't.
Might be a while.
The next review show will happen in less than a year. It has to.
Well, that's
actually
in
6 weeks.
Well, that's my hot take. We're going with it.
All right. Well, we'll have to remember to hold you to that in a year.
All right, sounds good. I have a couple of those, so. We'll be right back here on Hot Takes next Monday at 10 p.m. We'll see you then.
Yeah, thanks for listening again.